All right. Turn to Genesis 12. Genesis chapter 12. We will let Andy, who's soon to be married, we'll let him read. We'll see if he reads different now that he's engaged. One verse, Genesis 12, verse 7.
And then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him.
There he built an altar. I want to minister for a few minutes just about altar calls. And this is one of those that you file away for ministry one day. One of the unique aspects of our fellowship has to do with altar calls. And I don't know if you understand this, is that the idea that every single service you come to, there is going to be, first of all, an altar call or an appeal for salvation. Some of you, if you've only been saved in our church, not every church does that. And they may have, some churches have rare occasions where they have altar calls. Some churches will never have an altar call at all. That's for salvation. But then, beyond that, you understand that as part of our fellowship, there's a second aspect of an altar call, and that is we give an opportunity for believers. So the first appeal is for the unsaved. The second appeal is for believers and allowing them to respond to the sermon. So it's very important. Remember what I said to you on many occasions. If you're going to be a disciple, you need to understand why we do what we do. That is crucial. And it's important, one, because you're going to be challenged about it by religious people, but two, so that you can reproduce it effectively. It's hard to reproduce something you don't understand. So let's consider this idea of altar calls for a moment. Let's, first of all, lay a foundation, just a biblical understanding of the altar. So, the Bible is filled with the idea of the altar. And when you read the word altar, it literally means place of sacrifice. That's what the word means, is sacrifice or slaughter. And so it's a place of sacrifice. This is incredibly widespread. 433 times in the Bible it talks about altars. If you understand biblically anything that's repeated, that means it's very, very important to God. We see men in the Bible that built altars. Noah, Abraham in the scripture that we're reading here, Isaac, Jacob, the prophets, the kings. They all built altars, and the Bible records that. The tabernacle, which was the temporary place of meeting with God, and that was the tent, and then the temple, which was the permanent meeting place with God, the very center of the temple was the altar, and everything revolved around that, and you understand it was the altar that brought you into the presence of God. The New Testament refers to this. Hebrews talking about we have something better. The altars of the Old Testament, of course, were physical, and Hebrews refers to this and says, but we have an altar, and it's something that is better. It's through Jesus Christ. So spiritual health is connected to altars. You read in the Old Testament, people who were doing well, when they were doing well in their relationship with God, what do? They built altars. Then you read about people who were weak spiritually. This is one of the marks you can study for yourself about King Saul, who was a man who was a poor king. And what does the Bible say? Is that this was the first altar he had ever built. He had been king for years and never built an altar. He built an altar one time, never built another one again. Not an accident, no altar, spiritual weakness. And so we have that understanding. So it's important that you understand the purpose of an altar. In the Old Testament, it had four purposes. Number one, it always was a physical location. In other words, as opposed to, I talked with God in the woods. You can talk with God in the woods, but it's not the same as an altar. It was a physical location. The Bible says he built an altar at Bethel or wherever it was that each different places. Number two, the altar was where people responded to what God revealed to them. An altar was a response. In our verse, are you still there, Andy?
Yeah.
Read it again.
Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land, and there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him.
Okay, so this is the Bible pattern. The Lord appeared. So an altar is always God speaks. The Lord appeared and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So God appears and reveals something about his will for Abraham's life. So what does Abraham do? He responds to what God reveals by building an altar. So that is that. In other words, what Abraham is doing, or what anybody was doing when they built an altar, they were saying, I see what you have shown me, and I agree with it. That is, it is important that that preaching is not merely yada, 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 yada. He said a lot of words. What's he doing? I don't know. He's talking about the Bible. Yeah, okay, let's go have pizza. I hear what God says, and now I am responding. I agree with that. Applies to me. That's what he was saying. Number three, the altar was where you met with God. The whole purpose of an altar, you're responding, but you literally are meeting with God. The temple especially was where this was seen. You came to the temple to meet with God. The Old Testament, thank God we don't have to do that every time we sin. You got mad at somebody in traffic. Go get a pigeon, go get a goat. I sinned again. You had to go and meet with God. That was the purpose of the altar. And fourthly, the altar was a place of sacrifice. That's what the word literally means. It means slaughter or sacrifice. In other words, you are saying something is going to die. And all four of those ideas, that gives you a basic understanding of the altar. Now, for us, when we talk about the altar, we are typically talking about the space at the front of the church, between the stage and the pews. And in some places, the altar was, and we had for many years here, it was a wooden... It was something made of wood in, Catholic churches or other churches, you understand, it can be ornate or different things. But for our understanding, we understand come to the altar is a place. There's a part of it, you're coming to the front of the church. And so, as a part of our, here's a big word, liturgy. What does liturgy mean?
It means the order of service.
The order of service. Excellent. This man's on it. That's exactly right. It is the order of service or the order of worship. We do certain things. As part of our liturgy is a sermon is preached, and then we invite people to come to the altar. Sinners can come to deal with their sin and get right with God. Believers can come. And for these purposes... this is where you can respond to what God has revealed. This is where you can meet with God in order to do business with Him. And this is where something can die. In other words, if God has shown you something negative in you, that needs to die. Is anybody here you'd admit you got something in you that needs to die? Okay. All right. So this is what we do as part of that. And all of those are built in. So that gives you a biblical foundation. What is an altar? Why do we do that? Why do we say, and come to the... What for? And there are many churches that don't do that. But there's a reason why we do what we do. Okay, that's the biblical understanding. Okay, now, let's talk then the purpose of this lesson, apart from giving you that understanding. Let's talk about contending for... the altar. So let's. Some of you here, not everybody, but some of you here, you either definitely feel called by God. You say, I want to preach, or Some of you here, you say that is a possibility. I don't know if I'm called, but maybe that's a possibility. So, the purpose of what we're going to talk about now is, what if you were the pastor? What is the job of the pastor as far as contending for the altar? Let's talk about some practical thoughts. Practical thought number one, in new churches, in pioneering, you have to instruct people about the altar. Some of you have been raised in our church. You know what's going to happen in the service. It's not a mystery to you. When the pastor's like, it's not like you're freaked out, like, what? We're having an offering? I've never seen this before. What's going on? You know what's going to happen. You know, yeah, he's going to preach and then he's going to invite. That's known. Some of you don't appreciate the fact that a raw sinner who comes into our church, we have people who have never been to church in their life of any kind. Those are the kind we want them. We have people that they are former Catholics or, you know, other religions or something. So it's totally different, isn't it? Right? We don't wear dresses. Thank God. So
you got me.
Okay. So you got to understand this, is that when you have new converts, you literally have to instruct. So some guys don't even think about this. It's like, they've been in a church their whole life, and so they preach their first sermon and come to the altar. And it's like, no one's coming. But that's what I do. I preach and you come. Because they don't know. So that means you have to literally instruct. You have to do Bible study lessons. You have to preach sermons about the altar. You have to instruct people. You gotta, and you know, the nice thing generally in a small church is it's small enough. It's not like, you know, there may be someone. It's like, yo, Bob, this is what we do. You should come down here. Okay, come here. I want to talk to you. I'm going to pray with you here. It's small. It's family. So, but you have to literally instruct people about the altar. So you have to think about that. Why should you do that? Come to the altar. Talk to God. And again, if there's only a handful of people, you could, as I said, you could literally invite, come down here, this is what you would do. Let's pray about this. Okay, so you teach them. You sit here, you talk to God, you do business with God. Okay, number two, here's the practical thought number two. In all churches, whether young or old, you must contend for a supernatural dimension at the altar. This is more, we said before, it is part of our liturgy, order of worship, but it is not a formality. Do not think that this is just we ticked the boxes, yeah, we did the singy thing, we did the crazy thing, we got the offering, we did the preaching, tick, all right, we're done, we did our liturgy. The altar is supernatural. God meets with people at the altar. So, in preaching, and in ministry, you should aim people to meet with God at the altar. I have a conviction. That conviction came from my pastor who put it into me. Pastor Richard put it in. And that is, God can do more in a few minutes at the altar than I could do with 1,000 sermons. God is people's answer. I am not people's answer. I can help them, I can show them the way to God, but my job is to help people touch God for themselves. This is actually an approach to ministry. So, this means you do this in numbers of different ways. You have to preach and aim people and give them the understanding. That's a preaching requirement, that what you are doing is you are aiming them at Jesus. You're not aiming them at yourself. We had many years ago, we had a guy that pastored the Prescott Church for a short time while Pastor Mitchell was away. His philosophy of ministry was different. He aimed people at himself. After every service, he counseled for an hour and a half, longer? Because he was aiming, he thought he was the answer. So he aimed people at himself. Well, do the math. How's that going to work? I ask guys in pastor's seminars, if your church was five times as big as it is now, the way you currently approach your ministry, would it work five times as big? So when the church was, I don't know, 400 or 500, the guy, he counseled for an hour and a half every service. So if he had a church five times as big, so he's going to be there for, be out of there at 3 a.m. There's only 2 more guys to talk to the pastor. That's not going to work. That's not Pastor Mitchell's approach. Pastor Mitchell's approach is, your job is to touch God for yourself. That's, first of all, a philosophy. That's a belief. Our confidence is in God. Then, that means from time to time, you have to remind people of this. Human nature takes the most incredible supernatural things and can turn them into routine. Right? God killed Uzzah because Uzzah touched the ark. Part of what happened, it had been in his house for a long time. It had become furniture. Here's the holy presence of God. Oh, yeah. This is a holy thing. So, that means that Protestant Pentecostals can become, we say this, can become Catholic about their, in other words, this becomes now a Pentecostal genuflection. Mm-hmm. I come down, yeah, I do this thing, and in 10 seconds you're up. Well, I don't think you've wrestled with your flesh in 10 seconds, honestly. Now, a new convert, they may not spend a lot of time at the altar. So, what you have to do is periodically, you've got to remind people. You need to contend to touch God. This is not a routine. Yep, okay, God, you got me. All right, and I'm back to my seat. Spend some time. Talk to God. Do business with the issues of your soul. The practical benefit of that is that it cuts down on the amount of counseling. For a church our size, we actually do very little counseling. Not because we're against counseling or because we refuse to do counseling, but when you are aiming people at the altar, when you are aiming people to have a relationship with God, when you're giving them the understanding that God is your answer, the pastor's not your answer, the practical result is people touch God so they don't need the pastor to help them through every little issue in life. They learn to contend and talk to God about that. That's health. You produce healthy people. Practical thought number 3 in older churches now. Someday if you ever pastor an older church, you have to refresh people's understanding of the altar. As I said, human nature, it becomes routine. So you have to preach and teach periodically and bring them back to an understanding of the altar. Let's look, one more thought. Let's talk about some practical thoughts for making the altar effective. An altar call. I'm talking, of course, about not the altar call for salvation, but the altar call for believers. The second part of our altar call. So, if you want an altar call to be effective, number one, don't re-preach your entire sermon. You ever seen that? The guy who preached? And generally, guys who do this, they preach long anyway. So they've already preached long, and now they pull the altar call, and they're saying it all again. It's like, all right, just let us come to the altar, please. So, I would just suggest to you, if you have to say it again, you probably failed the first time. It's not going to get any better. So, don't re-preach your whole sermon. Okay. Number 2 is, as a practical, sometimes help people to seal things at the altar. You see this. So, you notice that not every altar call is exactly alike, and that is deliberate. So, sometimes you come, you pray, we're singing, we have a time, allow you time to pray, and then we are dismissed and we go home, but not every time. Sometimes you'll see me do this, that I will lead people in a prayer of agreement. I don't do that every time, but I do that sometimes. There is power in agreement. That there's something definite from this moment. Things are going to be different. From this, God is going to meet with us now. There's going to be a breakthrough. This curse is going to be broken. There's going to be a breakthrough in habits or deliverance, provision, healing, whatever it might be. So sometimes you can do that. Third thing is make the altar a place of supernatural deliverance and encounter. There is something profound at the altar. Pray for deliverance. I want to tell you something. You can pray. There are supernatural powers. Life is more than just intellect. Yes, you need to think, and yes, you need to decide, and yet there are things that drive people. There are things that torment people. Pray for deliverance. So sometimes you do that personally. You can do that in agreement. Sometimes you can do that personally. You pray for healing. There's something about this at the altar. You can. Sometimes it's connected to what you're preaching. Obviously, if you are preaching on healing, you'd pray for healing. You can be preaching on issues of the heart, bitterness, broken heart, whatever, and then pray for healing because they are connected. It doesn't have to be connected. You can just simply, there is something supernatural about an altar, so pray for healing. Pray for breakthroughs. There are people, they've been struggling. They want to be fruitful. So you're going to pray for, God, let them be fruitful. There are people that are struggling. It's like a curse is on their life of financially. Every time they start to get ahead, that needs to be broken. That can't continue in life. So pray for breakthroughs of various kinds. Pray for habits. We do that from time to time. You're preaching, whatever you preach on, how many of you here? You're struggling with a habit. You're still struggling with alcohol, tobacco, drugs, you know, whatever it might be, pornography. Come down and we're gonna pray for that. And let people be delivered in an altar call. Pray for money. Pray for financial issues. Very, very profound. Sharon Walter testified, I don't know if it was last Sunday or the Sunday before, and she kind of wandered into other things, but what she said was very profound. I remember very clearly, I preached on broken hearts, and I invited people to come and allow them to pray. My wife remarked to me about that, and then I did exactly what I said, is I led people in a prayer of agreement for God to heal broken hearts, that there's things that have happened, there's traumas or events or problems, and your heart has been broken and you have not been able to function clearly. I remember that so clearly because my wife said that she was crying at her seat just looking at Sharon Walter because she was weeping at the altar, weeping and weeping so profoundly. And you heard her testimony last week. And she had come and told me this shortly after. She said, when we prayed at the altar, she says, I want to tell you, something changed. That lifted off of me. So that was supernatural. This is more than information. It was more than liturgy. That's what we do. She encountered God in a supernatural way. And you need to understand that. So that would be, we have a few evangelists that are here, or if you're ever going to be an evangelist, this is, I often get guys that ask me for their ideas about evangelism. One of the things, if you're going to evangelize, an evangelist needs to do something that the pastor normally doesn't do. There needs to be something supernatural. So that can be the gifts of the Spirit, but if it's not the gifts of the Spirit, you must be contending for people to meet with God. And I would suggest an evangelist who only just preaches, pulls altar call, and then turns it to the pastor. I think that you failed in your ministry because inherent in evangelism is meant to be a supernatural dimension. So I just throw that in for free. Fourth thought is have some variety at the altar. This is not a spiritual issue or a law requirement that we have. It's just practical. Human nature, if every service is exactly the same, at some point people are going to tune it out. So, in other words, if every service is just, there's the offering, there's the praise, there's the sermon, there's the altar call, and then you go back home. People are going to tune it out. So, mix it up. One time you let people pray by themselves. Another time you lead everyone in a mass prayer. Another time you pray for specific needs in the sermon that you were preaching on. Another time has nothing to do with the sermon, but pray for other things that are not mentioned in that. Years ago, when I pastored in South Africa, I had lots and lots of revivals. We had some incredible meetings of various kinds. I had Keith Sullivan, who's now evangelizing our church. He was pastoring in Chicopee, Massachusetts. He came and preached, and back then his hair wasn't as gray, but Keith he definitely didn't strike people as a funky black person. He looked like a white dentist, from America. So. But it was so interesting to me. I had black preachers come, and they would do the singy thing and all that. But my people would talk about the revival with Keith Sullivan. And I was very interested. I don't know that Keith ministered in the gifts. He prayed for the sick, of course. I don't know that he ministered in the gifts. But it was very interesting is every single night he had different things that he prayed for. He'd pray, and then it's like, all right, we're going to pray. Some of you here, you're wanting God to help you in the salvation of your family, or it'd be some of you here, you're afraid to witness, or it would just be something every night. My people talked for years about that guy and that revival. And so I was struck by that. So you know what he did is he helped people to meet with God. He prayed for personal needs. And I saw, people need a personal touch. There is something profound about a personal touch. So that you can understand that if you become a pastor. So you can mix it up between mass prayer and personally praying for people, and that of course depends on numbers. You understand in our church, one of the things is I have to instruct evangelists if they're here preaching or visiting preachers if they're going to pray for healing. If they say anybody here needs healing. they got 400 people, and then now they're lost. It's like, what do I do with all these people? So, that's a practical. Sometimes in the altar, you give them a practical challenge about what they've just prayed about. You don't do this every time. You don't preach your whole sermon again, but there is something practical, right? You prayed for deliverance. You preach on witchcraft. Okay, now when you get home, some of you have things in your house that shouldn't be there. Right? You preached on pornography or things that are hurting you. That's a practical. So now you've prayed for deliverance and you give a final challenge. When you go home, you need to obey God in what He told you to do. And that can apply in a lot of different ways. Number five, never ever underestimate the power of a personal touch. This is a profound part of pastoring. If you are an aloof pastor, if people bother you, or if you are the holy man of God to where once I deliver the word from heaven, my job here is done, you are totally missing what people need. There is something profound about a personal touch, and often that is at the altar if you'll do that. People appreciate a personal touch. They need that. It doesn't have to take forever. It helps their faith. I would love to believe that every person will get a hold of the Bible and believe God for themselves. I had someone come to me the other day. They're having problems in their eyes and just got an unexpected problem that was discovered by the eye doctor. And they said to me, Pastor, I want you to pray because... I care how it's worded, was God hears your prayers. Well, God hears their prayers as well. What they're saying is here in a crisis of life, this is going to help add to their faith. And that's valid. That's not wrong. So, I point and preach and you can have believe God. But there is something about people in crisis, they want a personal touch. This is going to encourage their faith. All right, we'll pray about this together. They need that. They want the pastor to know, I've got this thing and it's I'm freaked out about it. All right, man, we'll pray here and I'm going to be praying for you. That is important to people. So don't underestimate that. Thirdly, as you impart a spiritual dimension as headship, there is validity that a pastor, there are things that can be imparted in prayer. Fourthly, and this is a file it away for someday, in times of rebellion, from time to time you have churches that will go through seasons of rebellion. I counsel pastors, listen to me, if you're ever going through rebellion in the church, you need to lay hands on people. You need to pray for people personally. And I saw this. I took over a church that the foundations were funky, and you know the we had a five-man council in a church of about 140 people or 120 people, one of which I don't even think was saved. Several of them didn't believe in the Holy Ghost. They hated everything. You know, this place was a time bomb. And believe me, it went off in my face. So we had splits. We had a whole group of people. They left, and the first one had a religious guy that had come in, made relate. We had two major rebellions. And so some of you can't appreciate this. It is supernatural, the things that it's just a funkiness. It's every service, man, it's like trying to swim through molasses. And trying to get the presence of God and get people saved is very difficult. And so, of course, you understand what happens is people, they leave the church, and then the pastor's the Antichrist. That's why I had to leave the church and blah, blah, blah. And so what happens is these are their friends. It was a very young church, and most of the older people all left the church. So these kids who never had a dad, now they come in church, and it's like they look up to the... And these people now are telling them the pastor's the Antichrist. So they're coming to church. I mean, their brains are scrambled eggs, but it's spiritual. And so I learned something is they would have people talking in their ears, and ultimately they have to make their own decision. They got to make up your mind. Is the Bible true? Did God know what he's doing by saving you here? You got to work that out for yourself. I can't choose that for you, but I would lay hands on them. At the altar, I would make up reasons. It would have to do with the sermon. Or sometimes some of you here, you're just going through it. I'm going to pray for you. And I would lay hands on them, and I would pray. And what I would discover is that you could see it during the service. You could see confusion on their mind. But when I would pray, it would lift. And it was like they could see things clearly. Now, that didn't solve all their problems in life. They had to make up their own mind. But what would happen is the confusion would lift, so that they could see clear enough to make a right decision. That is a profound thing. That was in the altar. There were battles that were fought in the altar. So, a lot of these things are things you just file away for the future, but they will be helpful for you someday. Okay, questions? Isaac.
So I've never preached an altar call after a sermon, but like in Bible studies, I've gotten to, we do like a little altar call. So yesterday you were talking about not understanding what you're preaching. Is that maybe what you're talking about? Like maybe it's not clear to me if I'm re-preaching the whole thing again during altar call, if I'm going too long?
Probably. But also, it might not be that you don't. It's not clear. It might be that you're nervous. Right? In other words, part of it is when you first are starting out is we're nervous about this. That's normal. Right? I don't know whether they get it. So if I just say, all right, you want to pray, I'm nervous that no one's going to pray. So I'm going to make sure. So, you know, point one, we said. And so maybe just it's nerves as well.
So maybe just learning to sum it up? Is that so what when you guys do the altar call, you call for sinners, and then, because you do talk about the sermon a little bit.
But sentences, couple of sentences.
Okay.
Couple of sentences. So there is something that I have had guys from other churches that they say in Prescott you have economy of time. We really do get to the point. right? If we have an evangelist for revival, that guy is going to have the service probably at 10 to 8 because that's an economy of time. We don't have a long offering. We don't have special music. We don't have dancing bears. There's nothing we do. We get to the point. We preach because we understand clarity. We preach 10 to, Pastor Mitchell and I average 35 minutes. I can preach less. Rarely do I ever preach longer. Economy of time. Altar calls like that. I don't need to re-preach the whole thing. There's no point in it. So, a couple of sentences, remind them, boom, and we're down to it. Anthony.
I have... So, you being a pastor, you're given this by God. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this is a calling of yours. So, it's fair enough to say that you're a gatekeeper to the altar, right? And you have to have dominion over the people in the church. I mean, this is what you're given. So, how much of what you do when you're a pastor is psychology to the people? I mean, to understand how people work, and I mean, in your sermons, do you use psychology to touch the masses of people? You understand what I'm saying? And not in a bad way, in a good way.
No, I don't think so. One of the keys is that my ties are all strategic, looking for my ties. There has to be some. I'm sure you could say that there are things involved. There are things that are involved that are actually just common sense of people skills.
Okay.
Right? So this is common sense. So people skills, you could say, is psychology. If I come, this is when I have a conflict, I have to deal with something. They're doing something that is stupid and harmful to the church. I don't want them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I could approach that two ways. I could say, what kind of moron would do a stupid thing like, okay, what kind of reaction do you think I'm going to get from that
person? That's not a good reaction.
Okay, so if I say, look, I need you to help me with something. I know that you didn't mean to do this, but you know when you said to that lady that she's fat and ugly? You know, now she doesn't want to come to church. And I know you didn't mean, but you understand that that's affected their salvation. Okay. At the end of the day, I don't want you to call somebody fat and ugly anymore.
Okay.
It's just an approach. So that, I suppose you could say that's psychology, but that's more common sense. That's people skills. So there are elements in approaching people. We were talking yesterday. Oh, you weren't here at breakfast yesterday. But I understand our church is our church from the time Pastor Mitchell came is now over 46 years old. So we have people who have been around a long time. Many of which have made bad decisions. So if my preaching, I understand that people have made bad decisions. So if my preaching is, you know, you ought to not make bad decisions, and if you make bad decisions, gonna curse your life and everything like that, it's probably going to heap condemnation, and they're not going to want to try.
Mm-hmm.
But if I understand that about people, I believe that people's answer is who God is. I lift up. And if you've made mistakes, God can help you. So I suppose that is psychology. That's understanding people.
Yeah. So understanding what you're dealing with.
Yeah. So it is important to understand people. That's common sense. But that is social awareness and social skills.
Yes.
Guys who have no social skills, then they struggle in ministry. And part of that is an awareness. What kind of reaction are you getting from people? Yeah.
Thank you.
Ken?
When you're talking about getting people to agree at the altar afterward, is that something, when you're writing a sermon, that you realize, you know, I'm going to need to do this in this particular sermon? Or is that something that, you know, as you're preaching or doing the altar call, you realize, you know, I need to get these people to pray and agree with you?
Well, it can be both. I have seen... You know, I don't write out. I have seen other guys' sermons that they have at the end of their sermon. They have written out what they're going to say in the altar. You know, I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't think I got to write it down. But So there is an element where, yeah, if I'm preaching on broken hearts, I know I'm going to preach. I'm going to pray for people with broken hearts. But there also is an element is when I'm praying before the sermon, I have in my Bible a piece of paper tucked into the cover, and the purpose of that, if God speaks to me of something to pray for or something to do, and I will write it down. If God speaks to me as far as a gift of the Spirit, supernaturally, supernatural knowledge about a sickness or a problem, I'll write it down. So it's both. It's common sense. There are things, of course, you're going to pray for because of what you preached, and then there is room for God could speak to me, or it would occur to me in the sermon that I need to. Right?
You mentioned making the altar a place of supernatural deliverance in praying. Involved of praying beforehand, like laying hands on the altar, contending for the Spirit in advance.
Well, I mean, it could be, literally praying at the altar. That could be. I am in my personal prayer. Again, we were talking about this yesterday. You were there at breakfast. That God is people's answer. I am not the Messiah. So I'm pointing people to God. So I'm in my prayer, I'm doing that. Sometimes I do pray. Yes, I pray through the building. Sometimes when no one's here, I'm praying at the building and I'm asking. Because I believe God is the answer. So I'm praying at the altar. There are people I know, they're struggling in certain things that I may go lay hands on your seat. Because I know what you're going through, and that may be individual. God, do you need to help them when they come? And so that's why if you ever move seats, it's your... Someone else, I have no idea why I'm so...
Why am I thinking this thought? No wonder my seat's warm when I sit in this. I've been in churches where the altar call starts. Every musician in the worship team goes up, including the bass player and everyone.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that we never do that in our church. We usually have at most one keyboardist, one piano player, somebody, one musician to get the altar call going. I was wondering, is that by design or is that a non-issue?
So what do you think would be the reason why we don't have every musician come up?
So that the other 20 can pray at the altar.
Exactly. It's simple.
So
that's just a practical to me. You know, guys think that the music creates the... It is a philosophy. There are guys, they believe the music is what is causing people to encounter God. I don't believe that. I believe that it's the person's responsibility... And I lead them. So that's a very practical. If I have 20 musicians that are involved in the song service, that means probably 19 of them are missing out on touching God.
Right. That triggers a question too, because yesterday we were looking at Elisha, and there's a scripture in between some of those miracles there where he has people come to him and talk to him, and Elisha prophesies and ministers many, many times without music. So it's obvious that music is not the deciding factor there, but there is one portion. Is the guy who says, I wouldn't even consider you if it wasn't for the king of...
Yeah. So, I don't have an argument with people. I don't think that it's like they're violating God if they choose to have all the musicians. Right. They're into it. And again, there may be cultural issues that I don't have a problem with.
Right.
Is that you may have people that they really like to sing. I have heard guys, they like to end, especially if it was something victorious, then they'll end it on a happy victory song. So I don't have an argument with that. But the practical is you've got a lot of people who are missing out on touching God for themselves. So that would be it. What were you going to say, Brian?
Yeah, your tie triggered a question. Years ago, and I've never had this... clarified in my own thinking. Pastor Mitchell made a statement years ago, preaching that cannot be experienced is fatal.
Yeah.
And I never asked...
Preaching that cannot be experienced is?
Fatal.
Fatal.
Or harmful,
okay.
Or something, but I never clarified that. That never, when you're doing this last time, going, that thing came back to my thinking again. Is that what he's talking
yeah.
about? Is the
yeah,
altar?
If you don't ever personalize it, then it's just simply information, I would say. If you are not, that's the whole key, is what does this have to do with me? What is God speaking with to you? So if it's just, yep, I heard some various religious words on religious subjects, then it's a failure. You have to experience it in some way. So that would be, you have to personalize it. That has to do with me. I agree with it or whatever. Or you have to encounter God. Like, go back to Sharon Walter. Sharon Walter needed her broken heart to be healed. So if I just simply said, folks, y'all got broken hearts, God can heal your heart, there's a couple scriptures, it's biblically, it's all true, bow your heads, let's go home, then she would still be functioning with something broken inside. So obviously there can be things, that's in a helpful sense. Obviously some of the things we're dealing with at the altar are fatal. We're dealing with pride and greed and, you know, all kinds of funkiness inside of us that can be fatal if you don't deal with those things. That's why the altar is a place of sacrifice.
If you find yourself in a pioneer church counseling a lot, because you said you guys don't do that much counseling here, what should you do then? Contend for God to move through your sermons?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, number one, for me, new convert problems are actually refreshing. In other words, so I get new convert problems of counseling that it's not a drama. It doesn't involve, you know, major conflicts between warring families in the church. It's like, Pastor, today, man, my boss and I, you know, and I gave my boss the finger. It's like, okay, let's pray. God, help us not give the boss the finger. No, I mean, it's like, it's refreshing. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm praying for a new convert, and you know, they're involved. They've had involvement in witchcraft. It's like, you know, things are moving in my house. You know, it's new convert stuff. So that's different. They'll work those things through as is necessary. Just a simple rule of thumb is, I don't want people to become dependent on me. You get people that it's clear what they want. Some of the counseling is, I get people who they don't want to make decisions in life. They come to me, so I will make their decision for them, which I will refuse to do. Pastor, I'm thinking of doing it. What do you think? Have you talked to God? That's my challenge to them. Because I don't want to run your life. Again, do the math. How could I run all of your lives? There's not enough hours in the day. That would be bad pastoring. My job is to put you in touch with God. So, if I get people that they're just of that personality or whatever, then I start to, you know, you get that. You get to needy women that they want you to be the husband that their husband is not. So in that case, I start being short with them. What? Yep. No. Yes. No. Okay. Go away. That's it. Because I don't want them to start going, you know, I don't want them to get their emotional fix from me. I'm not their husband. So that's an issue for another day.
Pastor, just thinking about like pioneering and stuff. So when you're preaching and you're talking about a personal touch at the altar, I mean, is there times when you're leading people in prayer or just praying while you're up there? I mean, that God helps you because you're not answering the altar call. I mean, so is there times that God really can speak to you and help you as the pastor?
Well, yes. I mean, theoretically you could, but obviously as a pastor, I don't know if you appreciate how many things are going through the pastor's brain at one time. In any given service, you're looking at this guy. He comes in and he looks like a child molester, and that guy is how did that guy wind up with a new convert over there? And someone's missing, and is my sermon, did I do enough? And you know, there's a jillion things going through your head at the same time. So. You know, so part of it is for pastors, these are things that you need to have time alone with God. So I suppose theoretically I could be praying for other people, God could be helping me, because there is power and agreement, but often that's a personal requirement. And then that's why we have conference for pastors, to so they can be preached to, and that's why we have pastors' seminars, so they can be ministered on a different level. So, I mean, those are, but it's personal, so I'd say more, you got to do that.
Would you have a different approach on preaching an altar call after a sermon and then versus like an outreach or the 180?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, So I would assume then that Isaac's outreach on the weekend, I would assume that after he pulled the altar call for salvation, he did not invite Christians to come and talk to God right in front of the barbecue. Right? No, so that's different, yes. You have to be sensitive to where you're at, what you're doing. So you do adapt.
So if you're pioneering a church and people who are going through crisis come to you and they're constantly trying to, you know, talk to you, get your advice and all this stuff, is it smart to, like, maybe in the next week or the next month, preach a sermon that would help them to be able to deal with it at the altar? Or would you try to avoid preaching on the issue that they're going through?
Yeah, I don't... number one, I do not... reactive preaching is bad preaching. Okay, so I don't preach reactively. In other words, if you come to me and you say, Pastor, there's gossip in the church, you're not going to hear a sermon the next service on gossip. That's poor preaching. Every little thing. Because, and then people do the same things over and over again. So what do? React every week to, you know, that's bad preaching. What gives power is, for me, 90% of my sermons come from my Bible reading. So I'm reading in the Bible. If you heard a few sermons in a row from 2 Kings or from 1 Kings, that was because that's where I was reading. Right? So part of that gives me confidence. I do not preach on people's problems because, one, it's poor preaching, because you're not giving them the whole counsel of God. Two is that you unnecessarily offend people, right? That wouldn't be helpful for to do that. Wait a minute, I just talked to you about that, and now you're talking about my sermon. So, but then there, of course, there are things that apply. So I have confidence if someone ever said, "Hey, man, listen, I did that sermon, I prepared that sermon a week ago." Okay, so. And there are times where I've had people, I'm counseling before service, and I've even had to say, I'm preaching on this tonight, just so you know. I didn't change my sermon because what you're talking about, you're going to hear about this, you know. So that's true. But preaching is supernatural. God knows. He's smarter than I am. And that's why I've preached sermon series where someone only ever came, every 3 weeks. And every time they walked in the door, the sermon was exactly for them. Why? Because God's smarter than I am. I planned out the sermon series 4 months ago. It's preaching supernatural. So preaching reactively is not how you preach. You preach the whole counsel of God. You got to help people.
Just a practical question. As far as pioneering, like Stephen, for example, you've got new converts or people that have never, not familiar with church, like you were saying, do you always lead them in a prayer? Do you have them repeat back? I mean, how do you, obviously you probably wouldn't sit down with each one of them and teach them how to pray at the altar. So generally, would your altar for the first 10 or however many services it takes just be repeat after me, or I challenge you and let's pray about this? Or how would you deal with that as far as just completely non-believers?
Well, that depends on, are we talking in the first, couple of weeks? You know, one of the things that happens is you establish a culture to where it becomes clear, right? It's clear. If someone has never been to our church, they see people go to the altar at the front. So it's like, oh, is that what we do? Why do we do that? And someone will tell them. So it's not so much the pastor has to tell them every time. They begin to learn that. Or as God gives revelation, they begin to, yes. Someone who's genuinely saved wants to meet with God. That's an evidence of salvation. That's not how you get saved. Right? It's not, I am more saved because I go to the altar more. You even want to go to the altar because you are saved. That's evidence of a work that God is doing on the inside. So in the beginning, yeah. But then once you establish a pattern, then it becomes easier for other people to follow along.
Pastor, I remember going to a small church, and that pastor was really small. When he called the altar call, he knelt down. Is that right? For as a pioneer pastor, maybe to do that, and then after you see, okay, they got it, then maybe stop that, like an example, to kneel down and they can see that. Because I remember seeing that, I had no clue, but it was kind of different. you know, what we do, but it's a small church, and he was doing it, and then he got up and finished up. I don't know if it was as an example for new people, or I don't know, is that right, or how?
You know, again, it's not that it's wrong. To me, it would seem a little odd, but if he's doing it to help people to understand, I suppose that'd be okay. But you can personally instruct, especially when a church is very small. The church is, you know, when I first pioneered, everybody fit in my house. Right? When people were missing from church, it was clearly evident. It's like, hey, the chair's not filled. So it's very easy. So you can deal personally. It's more casual. And that kind of is really, I see guys that they speak very stiff and formal when they're pioneering. There's only three people in the audience that they're speaking with.
You know, we are glad that you are here today.
Like, lighten up, man. You can take all these people out for a hot dog. So it's very informal. As the church grows, you can get more formal.
Obviously, pastoring and pioneering, or in a larger church, you're believing for conversions and deliverance at the altar. But say, as a disciple, if you're preaching altar calls and any outreach or 180, is it valid to, maybe you're seeing resistance to believing God, I want to see people saved?
Oh, yeah.
And even just contending for that if you see resistance.
Absolutely. And that's sometimes, someone asked the question about praying in the altar. Adam asked it before. Part of my praying in the altar is sometimes when there is resistance. Right? So what is it Pastor Greg says? That is unacceptable. I'm not putting up with that. So that may be that, you know, that's why I've had some of you come. I'm doing that for your education. What do we do when we're not getting people saved in the altar calls? We go to the altar and we take dominion, because we're going to rule here. That's biblical. What do I do when, part of when I lay hands on people's seat, part of that is knowing their need, asking God to help them in there. But sometimes we got people who are funky, that they're making it clear they're not flowing with the church, and they've got a funky spirit and they're trying to put something on the church. So when I'm praying for their seat, I'm not praying blessing. I'm taking dominion over whatever their flavor of funkiness is. So the key is, don't be funky. Okay? Write that down. Go ahead. I'm
working on the funkiness.
These biblical dynamics you're talking about with a physical location where God can meet with you and stuff, we hear the expression, build an altar. He built an altar there, this random place he was at. Does that mean that we can establish all these same dynamics at another location? There's a place, you know, I pray in my house. Establish those altars,
sure,
dynamics there or somewhere else.
So, altars where you meet with God. But in our church, we, of course, have an altar.
And then that needs
But that should not be the only altar that's in your life. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. In your home, you know, in your car. You know, I've had powerful meetings with God in my car. On airplanes, you know, there are different places God's met with them. So you can, that's the whole idea of New Testament priesthood, is you can meet with God on your own. But we're talking about in church. One more.
One other question. In the past, you've mentioned that periodically you'll kind of go back and retouch on certain subjects, whether it's tithing or pledges or whatnot. Would you say you should do the same thing with just typical personal personality type traits or personal problems, and just constantly just keep refreshing people's mind?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and so that's why a good pastor keeps records. I have a record of every sermon I've ever preached.
Well, you got like a list and then a check mark and a date, or?
Well, all my sermons are, I file my sermon is currently, the file is 2016. Well, I know I can go in a glance, and I can look at what have I preached in 2016. And I can click by date, by title, so by date, I know exactly when I preached each sermon. Yeah, so you keep records. I have a file, conference sermons, go in conference sermon file. This discipleship goes in, And what is this? To me, this is a pioneering practical. So under discipleship, under sermons, I have a folder called discipleships. Under discipleships, I have multiple. I have character, discipleship, supernatural, pastoral. This one is a pioneering practical. So I've filed it away there. So every pastor keeps records what he did. All right. I said that was the last one.
I'd
be a liar. Okay. All right, go ahead.
So kind of going off what Eli said, if we go out and preach after 180 and we see a lot of resistance in the street, people clowning or just like, there's a whole bunch of different things, seeing a bunch of crazy things. But if you see that resistance in the streets, do you think one could build an altar standing on a bench on the corner and ask the lost souls to come up and pray? Or
it doesn't have to be the bench.
Right.
You can pray with people personally where they're at. That's valid. So obviously what we're talking about here is specific to the church.
Right.
We understand you can meet with God anywhere. For salvation, you can meet with God and the thief on the cross. Right? Jesus didn't say, "All right, meet me at the bench." Okay? So you got to think through practically.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can pray for salvation anyway. So it doesn't have to be in a crowd. So we do on outreach, the people are getting saved and touched everywhere. Sometimes you can get them to the front. Sometimes they're resistant. Anywhere is valid. But we're talking about in church.
Right.
All right, man. I got to charge you for that one. That hey, tremendous, man. Very, very, very good. Very good stuff.